Okay, Shoftim starts off. Vayhi Achrei Mos Yeshua. And it was after the death of Yeshua. We have the transition from Yeshua. Yeshua is considered the student of Moshe. And therefore, there was nobody from the time of the first Shofet, Asniel, until Shmuel, that's going to have both temporal, that is, he's going to be the king, and he's going to be the Navi. He's going to have both temporal and spiritual power. Therefore, they could not appoint a king. And they could not appoint a king. The king was the first of the three mitzvahs that needs to be done that were held in abeyance. The three are the king, killing Amalek, and building the Beis HaMikdash. Now, the next chapter also starts off with the discusses the death of Yeshua. And the transition has several aspects. Part here in this parak, it says, Vayishal b'nei Yisrael b'Hashem. And the b'nei Yisrael asked God. How did they ask God?
They prayed?
No. There is a formal methodology of asking a question of the king can ask God from the Urim Bitumim. The high priest has how many garments? The high priest has 8 different garments. A regular priest has 4. The high priest has 8. One of the garments is a breastplate. On the breastplate, there are the names of the forefathers, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. There are 12 stones. On each of the stones, there is one of the names of one of the tribes, of the children of Yaakov. And the king...
Is that the name of Levi? Or Menashe and Ephraim Levi. Are not
divided? Levi. Menashe and Ephraim are used for when it has to do with inheritance. When it has to do with spiritual kinds of things, Levi is considered a tribe, not Menashe and Ephraim. So there is the difference. But from the breastplate was Levi. The king could ask, or the Navi could ask of the Kohen Gadol a question, and the letters would light up, and they would interpret what God was saying for them to do. So they went, and this was the procedure to clarify national policy, what national policy should be. So they went to ask, and they asked the question, and like anything else, it's how you phrase the question. When you ask a shayla, for example, it's very important of how you ask the question, how you ask the shayla, what things you remember to include, what things you don't include. Here they, and with the Urim Bitumim, it's also very important. Sometimes you can ask, should we go out to fight? And in some cases, God will say yes, but you're going to lose. But he doesn't say they're going to lose part. So it's important to ask the question correctly. When you ask the Urim Bitumim, you can only ask one question. And they ask, Mi Yada Lanu, who's going to go up first? Now the question is, either who should be the leader, what Shevet should have the Shofet, the first Shofet after Yeshua, or the question is, which tribe should go and fight? The Mephoshim learn it differently, and it could be understood in both senses. We'll see in the rest of the parak that the tribes each go and fight independently. When they came in under Yeshua, they came in as a nation, all the tribes with the 2.5 tribes that were staying on the west bank, on the east bank, 2.5 tribes staying on the east bank, leading the fighting. Now each tribe is going to do the fighting themselves. And the answer is that Yehuda should go first. That either means that the first nasi, first shofet should be from Yehuda, or Yehuda should go first and start the battle. Once one tribe started the fighting, the other tribes would be able to start too. And when they were victorious, that would set the precedent that people would not say, we don't have to be afraid, we don't have Yeshua, we can actually take these, the win the Jews. And so therefore they said Yehuda would go first. It was known that Yehuda was going to be the king, the final kingship was going to come from the tribe of Yehuda. That was part of the promise that Yaakov gave to his children. And it was known that Yehuda would come first. There are two leaders in Yehuda at this particular time. There is Kalev, and there is not Nachshon, but Nachshon's son. Nachshon is the prince. Ultimately, David does not come from Kalev. David comes from the parental line that Kalev comes from is through Nachshon. Okay? And if you look at the ages, if you look in the book of Ruth, you'll see that there are very few generations that cover the 500 years between Nachshon and David. So Yehuda is to go up and to fight. And Yehuda says in Pasuk Gimel, Vayomer Yehuda l'Shimon, Achiv aleiti, you should come up with me. Yehuda and Shimon go together. And if you look at your map, does everybody still have their maps? Does anybody still have their map?
Yes, anybody.
What?
Did you get it last time?
Yes, we got it last time.
I have a map, Rabbi.
I don't know. Should we give you one? I guess so.
So kind.
Is anybody else?
Thank you.
We'll have to make more. It doesn't look like these are going to work. We should probably charge you for them. That would keep them better.
Oh, Rabbi.
Thank you.
All right, let's pass them in.
We see that Shimon is on the bottom of the map. And Yehuda either surrounds him or dominates him. But Yehuda has part of the land on the different parts, and Shimon is within Yehuda. And they go out to fight. Now, the question is why? And again, they cite some reasons that Yehuda asked Shimon was because of the nature of the bracha that Yaakov gave his children. He calls Yehuda the brother of Shimon. Okay? In the blessing, there's a lot of unique things, but one of the things says that Yehuda is the brother of Shimon. And that either, again, cause and effect in the Navi or in the world is very difficult to understand. Either because of the bracha, that's what happened, or the bracha, Yaakov called Yehuda, Shimon's brother, because Shimon was going to be within the territory of Yaakov. But they go out and they fight. And they use the plural in Pasuk Dalet that they're victorious in the plural sense. B'yadam, and that Mefarshim say that indicates that Shimon took an active part and the merit of Shimon was part of the reason that they were successful. the use of the singular and the use of the plural indicates the equality between the two shvatim, the two tribes, when they go out. Now, they go down. They go down towards Hebron, and then there's a place called Bezek, not the telephone company, but a city. And this map does not, I could not find it on the map. Perhaps you can find it. It appears to be between Hebron and Beersheba. Okay? And they fought with this king. He is a Canaanite king. And they kill 10,000 people. Now, the king is called Adoni Bezek, the Lord of Bezek. And he's not listed in Yeshua. In Perek Yud Beis in Yeshua, they have a list of the kings of Canaan. When they come in, they list the kings. And they list 31 kings. And this king of Bezek is not listed in those 31. He has 70 kings that he has defeated sitting under his table. What he has done is he cuts off their thumbs and their toe, their large toe. Now, what does that do, beside being an interesting cruelty of...
They can
walk, but they can't run. They don't have the balance. They can move around. They have the ability to walk, but they can't run. And what else can't they do? You can't grab something. You can't grab a weapon. So you can function, but you can't function. You're defenseless and you cannot attack. So he stopped them from attacking. But he's kept them alive. And what does he do to these people? Does he feed? No. He doesn't feed them. He tosses scraps off of this table to give them food. They have to eat from his leftovers and from his table. He degrades them until the end. Now, when the Israel capture him, they kill his city. And because he's done this, they do the same thing to him. Now, in Halacha, there is no punishment like that. But there's what is called haras shah. There's things that can be done because of the need of the time. And he has set up a situation where he denigrates other people that he captured. And by B'nai Yisrael doing that to him, first of all, it is a fitting punishment. He receives the punishment that he has given to others. And it makes a statement to the rest of the Canaanites that are still there, that B'nai Yisrael are going to deal with them and they need to be taken into consideration. Because when they cut off his thumbs and his large toes, what does he do?
He realizes why he's being punished that way, because he did it to 70 other kings. No?
Right. He says in Pasuk Vav, Kasher asisi, as I have done, Kain shilem li Elokim, so God has repaid me. And then the Pasuk continues, Ve'aveh Yerushalayim ve'yamos sham. And they came to Yerushalayim, and he died there. We'll talk about Yerushalayim in a minute. But he dies a natural death. He isn't killed. And the reason that he merits that is because he admits his error, and he admits and recognizes God as being the cause. Not the B'nai Yisrael, not the people, but he realizes that God is what the cause is. You had a question?
No.
Okay. Now, in Pasuk Zayin and Pasuk Chet, they mention Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim is problematic. We have B'nai Yisrael fighting and capturing Yerushalayim. We had it in Yoshua. The same story is mentioned there. There is some overlap in terms of the story. We have, though, in the story of David, in Shmuel, we have David capturing Yerushalayim. We have to understand how that happens. When was Yerushalayim captured and how? Now, what happens, we see that B'nai Yisrael do not weed out and do not destroy all of the Canaanites. And in particular in Yerushalayim, they leave a group of Yevusi intact. Now, the question is why? And the answer can be found in this week's Parsha, in the reading of the Parsha from yesterday. What is the answer? What does the Parsha talk about Yerushalayim here? Where in the Parsha does it mention Yerushalayim? It says that a person by the name of Avimelech came to Yitzchak and they made a covenant. They made a promise. And if you look at it, the promise was made between Abraham and Avimelech, and the promise was made between Yitzchak and Avimelech. And the wording of the promise was that I won't do any damage to you, you won't do any damage to me, your sons won't do any damage to my sons, and your grandchildren won't do any damage to my grandchildren. So, at this point in time, at this point in time, and up until the point of David, one of Avimelech's grandchildren was alive. And therefore, B'nai Yisrael could not completely capture Yerushalayim because of the promise that occurs in the Chumash. Because of that, we see that a lot of other kinds of things happen in terms of the not destroying all of the Canaanites, and we'll see that much of the rest of the chapter deals with the failure of B'nai Yisrael to destroy all of the different Canaanites. Going back for a minute, when B'nai Yisrael come to Israel, it says there are seven nations in Israel. One time it says six, and one time it says five. The inhabitants knew that the Jews were coming. Some of them took action in order to stay alive. One group comes to Yeshua and they say they come from far away, and he allows them to convert and he makes them then drawers of water and workers of the temple. One of the tribes runs away. And there's a whole medrash. Is there anybody from South Africa here? No. So we won't tell you the medrash, but the medrash has to do with the fact that they run away. And there's some historical proof, but we aren't going to go to that. They left. Others stayed and fought, even though they knew the B'nai Yisrael were supposed to inherit the land. But they did not. There is a mitzvah that says, do not throw them out, do not conquer them all at once, because you won't be able to properly transit and occupy the land. But they allowed them to stay, and they made peace covenants with them. And we'll see that this is becomes a problem later on. Okay, now B'nai Yisrael go and capture Hebron. Hebron is what? Does anybody know anything about Hebron now?
What? It's where our forefathers are buried.
It's where the forefathers are buried. In the week ago Parsha, that's Chayei Sarah, that's what he bought. Hebron is an acquisition. Hebron is one of the six cities that are considered an Ere Miklat. Does anybody know what an Ere an Ere Miklat is?
City of refuge.
What is a city of refuge?
Someone kills someone accidentally.
If someone commits manslaughter, the obligation is that they have to go to this city. And if they leave the city, they can be killed by the person's relative. And they have to stay in that city until the high priest dies.
So why were there four of them? Did that occur quite often?
What?
Wasn't there four? How many cities?
There were six. There were three on each side of the Jordan. And then eventually there's supposed to be 12. And there were also 48. The Ere Miklat were cities of the Levim. There were also other cities that were total cities of the Levim, and there were 48 places where the person could end up going. But there's six cities that are called Ere Miklat. Now it says that in the Chumash and in Yeshua. It says that Hebron is given to Kalev. Kalev, when he was one of the spies, they came in, there were 12 spies, one from each tribe. Kalev goes to Hebron to pray that he doesn't err as the others are. And because of that, he is given the city of Hebron above and beyond what his brother, what the rest of the tribe gets. He has a special grant of Hebron. But it does not include the city itself. It includes the area surrounding Hebron. Now, Kalev is the head of the tribe. Hebron is called Kiryat Arba. Now there is another yishuv next to Hebron called Kiryat Arba. And it's called that because of four giants that live there. And here it indicates that they kill three of them. And the question is, what happened to the fourth? The fourth is Og that Moshe has killed. Now, they're going up to fight in a place called Kiryat Sefer. Now, Kiryat Sefer is not the Kiryat Sefer of today. It is also apparently south of Hebron. And Kalev makes a statement. He says, whoever conquers this land, whoever goes out and conquers it, I will give him my daughter Achsa as a wife. Now the Mephoshim say, and they mentioned that there are four. There are four times that people make this kind of conditional statement. If you go out, if this happens and you know, something happens, then I will do this. One is here. One is with Shaul and David. Shaul says, whoever goes out and defeats the Plishtim, I'll give him my daughter. One is Yiftach, who is one of the latest Shoftim. You look on the other side, Yiftach is mentioned his right after the big 300 years. He says, whoever comes out from my house, if I defeat the enemy, whoever comes out, then I'll bring us a sacrifice. And the Mephoshim comment, this is not the way to run a business. You don't make a condition on a marriage or something like that in a way that you don't know what happens. In the case of Kalev, in the case of David, it worked out. In the case of Yiftach, Yiftach's daughter comes out, and Yiftach either ends up killing her or putting putting her on top of a mountain where she could not have any contact with anybody. So that they mention that this is not the proper way of doing something. You don't say, if I win the fight, I'm going to marry my daughter off to the guy who wins. I wanted these people to come in. Could you see if the Taste of Torah people are available? In Pasuk Yud Gimel, it introduces somebody called Asniel. In general, you need to know that the names in the Navi may or may not be the correct names. There is another book in Tanakh called Divrei Hayomim. It's at the end. And we see that Asniel has another name there. And we'll continue and we'll give you that reference. But the naming oftentimes reflects some particular characteristic that we wish to emphasize. Moshe's father-in-law is going to be mentioned. Moshe's father-in-law has 10 names. And those names are not necessarily...
Seven?
No, I think 10, maybe 7. I thought it was 10, but it could be 7. I think 10. But it could be 7. I'm not positive.
Maybe also 10.
But he has different names to emphasize different parts of who he is and what he was doing.